The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Hi, I'm Amanda Richard, and tonight we have a wonderful interview with cellist Joel Krosnick from the Juilliard String Quartet. And the Juilliard String Quartet will be coming to the University of Delaware on Saturday, November 7th. We're going to open the interview by letting you hear the Juilliard String Quartet play the second movement from Claude Debussy's Quartet in G Minor, and that's going to be one of the works that they will play on Saturday, November 7th. And we're going to hear the second movement, which is marked Assez Vif et Bien Rhythm. Thank you. Well, first of all, Joel Krosnick, thank you so much for joining us here on WVUD.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is your last season touring with the Juilliard String Quartet.
Yes, by the end of June, June 27th, in a concert at Ravinia Festival in Chicago, June 27th, 2016. That will be the end of my 42nd season in the quartet.
I think that's one of the things that's remarkable about the Juilliard String Quartet. It goes back to 1946, and it's been an ongoing tradition associated with the Juilliard School of Music, but it's been an institution.
In 1946, it was a decision of William Schumann, the new president and prominent American composer, that a string quartet would represent the school very well in terms of its teaching of chamber music and the instruments, and that it would be able to take the name and reputation of the school around the world. And he turned out to be right. He and Robert Mann put their heads together and sort of hypothesized the quartet that would devote as much care to newer music, music of its time, which attention had been generally reserved for masterworks of the past, and might indeed then be able to shed new light on the masterworks of the past and make them perhaps again new. That turned out to be more than a publicity phrase.
And in fact, the program you're going to present down here at the University of Delaware on Saturday, November 7th, does just that. It presents something from the traditional canon, and then something from the 19th century, and something brand new.
Yes, it is. It will be brand new. It will have been premiered the night before in Philadelphia. Ninth quartet of the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, former University of Pennsylvania faculty member, Professor Richard Wernick. We are at the moment exploring and learning and dealing with our identity and the identity of his new work.
How different is it for you guys when you approach a new work like that as opposed to revisiting something that you may have played, maybe not together, but have played before?
Well, it's the same process of taking the language. I mean, in this case, in the case of a newer work, or the other contemporary work we're playing this year, the first quartet of Elliot Carter, perhaps when one starts out with something like the Wernick Ninth Quartet, one doesn't speak the language. I mean, after all, he just wrote it. And so you learn the details of the language, the grammar, the syntax of the language, and in doing that, reach yourself into his work. And it does indeed encourage the same approach to the Debussy String Quartet, which is also and was during its time and is still, however famous it may be, a mind-blowing, interesting, revolutionary work. And the harmonies in the last movement of the Debussy Quartet take the same investigation as the harmonies in the Wernick Ninth. So it's not essentially a different process, except, of course, when you start a new work like the Wernick Ninth, you don't speak the language at all. So you have to learn to spell the words, learn what the shapes of the sentences are, the paragraphs, the, you know, all of that.
That's very interesting that you're talking about it that way, because it's not just reading the notes and getting the fingerings right, it's trying to understand sort of the subtleties of playing the notes.
Well, I mean, it has to do with any play you would put on by an author, even if you know the author. Let's put it this way. You can memorize the lines without understanding anything about what they mean. But while you're at it, you may as well memorize the lines and be involved in learning what they mean. And involuntarily, we're deep into what these lines may mean while we're learning to speak them. It's not just a matter of, all right, I'm on the first beat here, you're on the second beat there, let's use a fourth finger on this and an up bow. It's much more organically involved with the elements of music. The same elements, for example, that one will be involved with in the Debussy Quartet, just that these are newly created by somebody in his own personal language, which gradually we are learning to speak.
Is this the kind of lesson that you all try to communicate when you do a master class?
We certainly do. I mean, one of the quickest generalities one can make about teaching young people in the master class is they sit down and play a Haydn quartet for you as though they've already heard it, or here's how it goes, and we learned it from a CD. And I guess what we try to do in the masterclass is, in the best sense, try to get them involved as though they have never heard it, and what's the language, what's the grammar, what's the syntax, how does it work? And then ultimately, very simply, and this one can't teach anybody, what does it mean to you? You know, so how we find, for example, teaching a Haydn quartet quite difficult because one assumes, well, you know, Haydn quartets, they go like this, you know. Well, Haydn thought, and indeed it was true, that he was inventing his language as he went along. How long the phrases were, how many instruments were involved in the phrases, what the phrases were made up of, I mean, all kinds of things. So when one becomes, whether one is the teller of a Haydn quartet or a Ligeti quartet or a Carter quartet or the new Wernick quartet, one has to figure out what one is going to tell. You know, what does one see? What is one? And it's not just facts. It's ultimately, what do you see, and what do you think? What do you think of what you see? What do you feel about it? Is it very dissonant? Is it very strong? Is it very vulnerable? Is it very tender? And so, yes, one deals with that in masterclass, absolutely.
Not just the technique.
No, I mean, what one certainly will then say when one says to somebody, look, you hear this harmony, and you may tell, look, please stop on the third beat and hold this harmony, and they hold a diminished seventh chord or something in the middle of a phrase and say, look, what do you think about that harmony in the middle of the chord? Is there anything unusual? And even without knowing the name of it, somebody might say, yeah, it's sort of tender or purple or who knows what they say. But and then one deals, well, how do you make a tender sound? What you could say tender, but you're playing something with a wooden box with metal strings on it. How do you get tenderness out of that? And so you deal with the physical realities also. Contact point on the string, speed of bow, the amount of weight, the nature of the vibrato involved, you know, but it's all in response to what's in the music or what a student might hear in the music.
You are retiring from touring with the Juilliard String Quartet, but you're going to continue teaching at Juilliard.
Yes, I'm right now and have been for, I guess, 27 years or something, the chair of the cello department, and I have 14 fabulously gifted young cellists studying with me, and I coach 3 quartets, and it's full-time. Without touring with the quartet, it's full-time.
This is what I think is wonderful about your quartet, since it is based out of the teaching at Juilliard. It's one of the things that makes you guys, whoever's in the quartet, makes you wonderful to go and visit, because you are focused on teaching people in addition to performing for them.
Well, it's what the quartet was in its ultimate fruition, which has happened over, this is the 70th year of the quartet. So what has happened over those 70 years is more and more expression of the original intent, which was that we would serve as teachers, mentors, examples of what to do with this in this art form. And we love doing that. It doubles the workload, but we love it.
The next topic we take up with Joel Krosnick is the release of the Touchstone Multimedia production version of Franz Schubert's String Quartet in D minor, often known as Death and the Maiden, which the Juilliard String Quartet released this past summer. Before he talks about it, let's give a listen to the third movement, the Scherzo, marked Allegro Molto. Thank you. One of the things that you have released this past summer is an interesting project, an interactive digital version of Death and the Maiden.
The idea is to give, never mind the value of it for young players, but what it is a multi-pronged performance, rehearsal, score reading, analysis, historical knowledge availability, all kinds of things of a great work like Death and the Maiden Quartet, one of the other works produced by the company, British company Touch Press, was also, for example, the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven. They've done that. And the idea is to incorporate all manner of levels of the ability to get inside what this work might mean to a listener. And one can listen straight to the performance, which is a live performance. It's a recording, and was a little unusual because we made a recording. But while we were making the recording, there were, I don't know, 6-8 cameras on the stage with us, and they were taking film shots at every angle of each of us and all of us. And when it came to putting the recording we made together with the visual aspect, a tremendous amount of work was involved in the alignment, the really precise alignment of the video with the audio. But one can see this performance. One can, with the technology involved, one can increase the volume on the viola, for example, or second violin, or first violin, or cello, and coordinately focus the video on that person and hear all the way through the piece, if you'd like, what a highlighted second violin sounds like with the other instruments. Not alone, but highlighted, and or the viola or the cello. So one can do something which actually happens if somebody's sitting in the second row and he happened to get a seat and everything, and the seat turns out to be on the right side of the quartet, and he's sitting right underneath the violist. So it can happen that way, and he's hearing the quartet with the viola, cello in front of him, and the two violins off to the left, or sitting in the dead center, or sitting on the left where the violins are right in front of him. So you can do that and hear the quartet perhaps in a variety of vantage points, as though you could shift your seat in the middle of the performance. There is also an Urtext score that can be played while you're listening. There are comments on the score by us, which can be played by themselves or played as a voiceover while you're listening. There are performances of the song on which the Death and the Maiden Quartet is based and from which it gets its title, the Death and the Maiden song by Schubert. And there is discussion of the text and discussion of Schubert's life at the time he wrote it and what effect various things in his life have had on the piece and all of that. So depending upon what you want to hear, it's a chance for a listener to go more deeply than just watching somebody in fancy clothes sit up there and play the piece.
I can remember my dad, an amateur violinist, back in the days when stereo LPs came out, getting these Music Minus One discs and turning down the soloist track and then playing along. And this is taking that to the option, but it's expanding it. So you have lots of different ways that you can be looking at a piece.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is the idea of that you'll have to look this up. I won't remember his name, but the man who founded Touch Press was the idea to deepen the listening experience for, quote, the ordinary listener, mm-hmm. the music lover, the person who's not a musician, but who would like to know more of what's involved in a great work, more of what's involved in putting together a great work from the point of view of performer, all of that. And never mind that young musicians, if they're in a conservatory or a music department, music school, can listen to this and hear what certain people who've been involved in a work like this much of their lives, what they think about.
You've spent 42 years with the Juilliard String Quartet, and I think in the press release that came out announcing your retirement and Astrid Schwein taking your place come next year, one of the things you said that really struck me was it's like been 42 years of relationships and friendships.
Yes, indeed. What can I say? I mean, one spends more time with those people in the work that we do. I don't think, you know, too many people have an idea of how many hundreds and thousands of hours have been spent before that 8 o'clock concert you're going to hear in Newark, Delaware. You know, I mean, we spend hundreds of hours together, you know, learning something like the Wernick Ninth Quartet or going and re-exploring from the word go the quartet thoughts of Schubert. And over the years, I mean, I spent 24 years or something like that in the quartet with the great Robert Mann, a great deal of time, 18 years with Earl Carlos, 20-some-odd years with Joel Smirnoff, and the sharings and the mutual investigations and explorations are at the root of what became very important friendships in one's life. Samuel Rhodes is one of the closest people to me in my life, as is Joel Smirnoff. I mean, they're no longer in the quartet. I talked with Samuel Rhodes yesterday or the day before yesterday and Joel Smirnoff yesterday. Not in the quartet with him anymore.
But the idea is that on stage, it's not just four people performing. It's four people explicating, if you will, their relationship and their relationship with the music.
Yeah. Well, it's something alive and happening at that moment. We are speaking together. We are reacting to each other. We are each of us reacting to the music and reacting to each other's reaction to the music. And my dear colleague Joel Smirnoff used to speak of seeing a quartet perform a great work as a little bit of a voyeuristic experience. that you sat there and were watching something that, if you realized, it was really a very intimate interaction and very intimate conversation, which had moved from a rehearsal space onto the stage, and there it was in front of you. We rehearse an hour, for example, before, at least an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, before each concert, before the public is let in. And we're reinvestigating perhaps what happened the night before, what we've been doing in a certain thing. Why don't we think about changing this? Why don't we investigate that, you know? Then at 8 o'clock, the people come in, and we continue our search right in front of the people. We think is the most lively type of, you know, we're not reciting memorized, rehearsed lines. We are rehearsed. We are prepared. But we are speaking to each other and reacting to the music, and it's never quite the same twice.
Joel, this has been remarkable. Thank you so much for spending this much time with us.
Well, thank you for having me. And we're looking very much forward to our concert at the University of Delaware. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.